Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One,
Spotify,
and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Feel Good Podcast with Kimberly Snyder. Our goal is to help you develop a lifestyle that promotes health, wholeness, and healing. Feeling good is about accepting who we are and living from a place of inner peace in our perfectly imperfect lives. Every week, we provide you with interviews with top experts in their field to support you in living your most beautiful, inspired, and joyful life with a focus on health, wellness, meditation, and spirituality, and personal empowerment. I'm your host, Kimberly Snyder, founder of the lifestyle brand Saluna, New York Times bestselling author and nutritionist. Now let's get started.
Hey beauties, welcome back to our Monday interview podcast. I am very excited for our guest today, Dita Von Teese, who is a dear friend of mine and a client. She's also a burlesque dancer who's pretty much put burlesque as glamour on the map. She's an entrepreneur, singer, an actress, and a costume designer. What I really love about Dita is she's done things her own way. She's forged her own path. She's been enormously successful, and I really, truly admire her. So I'm excited to pick her brain today. But before we get into that, let's give a quick shout out to our fan of the week, who is Long 20. And here she writes, Kimberly does a great job with her episodes in guiding us to live a healthier lifestyle in mind, body, and spirit. I always feel informed and learn something new when I listen, and I absolutely love her holistic, natural, basic remedies for everyone to feel and look their best. Highly recommended. Long 20, thank you so much for your review, for being part of our community. I'm very grateful for our connection. So thank you so much. Sending you a big virtual hug. Hope you're cozy and safe wherever you happen to be. And beauties, for your chance to also be shouted out as the fan of the week, for me to read your beautiful words, please take a moment out of your day, head over to iTunes and leave us a review that could literally be one sentence long, but it's just a great energetic way to support the show and give the love back. I thank you so much in advance already for doing that. And while you're over there, you can also subscribe to our show, and that way you never miss out on a Monday interview podcast such as this one or our Thursday Q&A podcasts, which come directly from you guys. They come from the community. They're questions that most all of us share, have thought of, have wondered about. So it's a great form of positivity and inspiration coming into your inbox every week. All right, all that being said, let's launch into our interview with the fantastic Dita Von Teese. Hi, Dita. It's so great to be back with you. I feel like it's been a couple of years since you've been on the podcast, around when your book, Your Beauty Mark, The Ultimate Guide to Eccentric Glamour, came out, which went on to become a New York Times bestseller. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And I was so excited to be included in it. Remember, we did a section on nutrition, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a while now, I guess. I was just having a flashback. I think our last time we did the podcast, we were sitting on my bedroom floor here.
Yes.
Yeah. It was.
I loved it. And then the last time we saw each other was actually for one of your events, mm-hmm. which was... It was beautiful. It was many women. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was nice. I was really glad that you could be part of that. That was just kind of like a little dip into, you know, the experience of doing talks and teaching and being vulnerable and showing up in the morning with zero makeup and zero hairdo on and showing a room full of people exactly how I put myself together. So it was really kind of like I'd never done anything like that before, but it was really special, and I hope I can do it again if we're ever allowed to be in rooms with people again.
So speaking of which, Dita, we have known each other for many years now. We've worked together. We've been friends for many years. And one of the things that I really love about your philosophy is really, it's about confidence to me. It's about connecting with yourself. And it's this form of glamour that is is unique to each person. And, you know, when we were doing that event, we were on this panel, we kept talking about how it's this feeling. So now we're in this really unique situation where we're all at home all day and there aren't events to get dressed for necessarily. And we're not, it's just the world is so different now. So can you share some of the ways that you are practices, things where you're still working on feeling good within yourself? I mean, glamour in a different form because we're not going to see anybody else, but just that, you know, that part of your philosophy, which I always loved, which is about how you feel within yourself. So what are some of the things you're doing to keep up that feeling goodness?
Well, it's interesting because I think, you know, when all this kind of started, I had a lot of people reaching out to me, like wanting me to, you know, do videos and be on camera and show people how glamorous and, you know, done I am all the time at home. And can you do some content and give us a tour and show us what you're wearing? And I said, you guys, I'm not doing that actually. Like, even though I can dye my own hair, I stopped coloring my hair. I stopped all my red nail polish. I just honestly felt like this is a moment for me to take a break and also kind of, you know, experience, have a real true break. I mean, that's not to say, like, listen, right now I'm wearing a cute cotton dress from the 1950s and I am not wearing, you know, makeup. I just really wanted to like take this time to like work on other things that aren't about like the aesthetics of glamour. I mean, that's not to say I'm not working on what I'm going to do when I'm out of this, but I just really felt like I needed to breathe. I needed to let go and stop feeling like obliged. And it's, you know, it posed a little bit of a problem because it's like, I also don't want to be, I felt a little bit like I want to take a step away from social media and reading the news much. And, you know, I'm not in any rush to like get on camera or do show everybody how my glamorous life at home. I don't feel like it's really the right tone right now. I kind of just have felt like gardening and doing laundry, cleaning the floors, you know, like being outside with the nature and, you know, looking at flowers and planting things, like really reading, exercising, learning about how to, you know, how to adjust my life. So it hasn't been very important to me. Not as, you know, although I've gotten a lot of pressure, like, oh, we're doing photo shoots from afar. And I'm like, I'm not doing any of that right now.
I love that. Dita, it sounds so healing. I mean, when was the last time you took a break from makeup and photos and images, which, you know, again, people expect from you. I feel like everybody wants more pictures of Dita and they want to see more of how to be like you and how to dress like you. So it must feel really good.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I just feel like there's a lot of things that in the last, I mean, for as long as I can remember, actually, I've been running a million miles. Mm-hmm. Like, I've taken four trips, like three of them international trips back and forth just in January and February alone. So I feel like I've spent most of my time away from home the last decade or more. And it's kind of been like, okay, I'm going to take a minute. I'm going to enjoy my house. I'm going to learn about my house. Like, how do I adjust the timers on the sprinklers? I'm going to do that myself. You know, just
I love that zone
of like all these things that I'm always like asking somebody else to help me with. I'm kind of like, I'm going to do it. Actually, this morning I woke up and said, you know, maybe I can paint that room myself. You know, I painted a big room myself, but I thought, maybe I can do that myself. You know, I'm just having a moment where I'm kind of like not in a, you know, I feel really good about taking a time out. I mean, that being said, it's like, I don't want to like lose sight of what I've always preached to people, you know, as a glamour evangelist. I like to tell people, you know, do what makes you feel good. And that's, you know, for some of us involves like putting on red lipstick, even if you're not leaving the house. And make no mistake, I'm doing that now. And, you know, I'm doing that still. Like I go before I go on a walk, even if I'm, even though I'm wearing a mask,
I love it. Lipstick on under there.
I know. It's like, there's things that I'm still doing, of course, but I'm really kind of focusing on, you know, all this kind of hitting the reset button so that I am ready. You know, I had to cancel my whole tour, my show tour that I've been preparing for almost 2 years to go on, and I've invested a lot of time and, you know, a lot of my income, my money into that tour. Obviously disappointed about that, but just thinking of like how I can come back, you know, stronger and what else I can do to make it better and to be more prepared, to make sure my body feels more prepared, you know, all of that.
So what do you do, Dita, when, you know, I feel that I put a post on Instagram about, you know, letting your life unfold in perfect timing, which is something I feel, you know, I struggle with, just work and my toddler isn't in school, so I'm not getting as far ahead. And, you know, my single friends are thinking, oh, I can't meet somebody right now and I'm supposed to be doing this and doing that. So when you have those moments where you feel, oh, this is so annoying, why does it have to be this way? I'm getting behind. What are your thoughts you tell yourself, or how do you sort of reconcile in your head? Because it sounds like you're in a really peaceful place right now with just being able to let go of everything. But, you know, letting go is such a intense, complicated process. I'm sure you too have ups and downs with feeling trapped and feeling behind and feeling frustrated and then also feeling peaceful. So how do you deal with that?
I've been talking on the phone a few times with one of my friends named Ilona Royce-Smithkin. She's 100 years old. And I feel like when I talked to her and, I kind of had this, oh my God, you know, knowing women that are in their 80s, 90s, 100 years old, I really treasure my conversations with them. And I always think you know, I got on the phone with her. I was kind of like, what does she think of all this? Oh my God. Oh my God. And she was sort of like, not concerned. And what she kept saying to me was, you know, she was just like, this is a great time for you. She was like, I see you. I see how busy you are and how much you're doing. You need to relax and sit back and take time for you. Don't worry. You've done all this work. You have built up all this love. Because you need to give yourself credit for what you've done and not like beat yourself up for what you're not doing right now. Like stop for a minute. See, and I thought, yeah, I guess I never really think of it that way because we're so used to having the pressure of like, what are you going to do next? How are you going to make money next? What are you going to do? It kind of meant a lot to me to hear that from her. And she said, and also, why don't you rest your body for a minute? And I said, because I thought about all those airplanes and the high-heeled shoes and all of these things. And there's a lot of things I've been meaning to deal with. I have like a kind of a chronic pain issue that I've been ignoring for a long time. In fact, I was reading a little bit. I think you touch on that sort of thing in your last book, which I think is my favorite one, The Perfectly Imperfect.
Yes. I'm so glad to hear that, Dita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some interesting things that you've written in there that are really relative to what I've been kind of thinking is relative to my pain issues. So I've been kind of like trying to think about what I can do to, you know, set myself right and pay attention instead of just saying, I'll think about that later. I'll do that later. I'll deal with those emotions later.
It's such an interesting time because I feel that, you know, and Eckhart Tolle said this, it's almost like a forced retreat for everybody, where all the distractions of life, the running around, the shopping, the meeting people for brunch, it's all been taken away. So in a way, it's very confrontational for a lot of people to sit with their feelings and with their emotions, and to also not be able to run away as much. And I know a lot's come up for me around that, Dita, just this, you know, the feeling enough without having to do is this. So there's this healing on that side. Can you share with us maybe some things you've learned when the distraction, but the busyness of life has been taken away? I know it's a really personal question, but if there's, you know, if the more we share with each other, I feel the more healing takes place and people can look into their own lives. So there's anything you'd like to share that maybe you've learned, or something that, you know, you were distracting away from, or you didn't want to feel, or anything at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think like the perfectionism is something I have to like more. And that's like always on my mind, you know, because when you start thinking about that, when you are always striving for perfection and whatever you do, which I've always been called, you know, considered myself kind of someone who is always trying to, you know, I'm very detail oriented and I want everything to be perfect and I want everything to be right. And, you know, you can do all that in your work and work with integrity, but like, I've had to think more about like forgiving myself or noticing when I've done something or said something. I notice how I speak to my body about what I like and don't like about it. And I tried to change my conversations in my head, you know, instead of saying something negative to myself in the mirror, then trying to replace that with something positive. Like instead of being like, I don't like how my butt looks, you know, I'm going to say to myself, oh, isn't it great how my butt muscles allow me to walk with a strong stance? You know, I try to think about being grateful instead of being critical of myself. And then that also is about others too. Like, you know, I learned that a long time ago, actually. Like I've always enjoyed this. I have this like thing that I love to do where pretty much, you know, everyone I meet, I'm like, love to find like that like really beautiful thing in them. You know, so I try to like not, I think when we're much younger, it took me a while to learn this. You know, I probably wouldn't have done it in my 20s or whatever, but learning not to like be judgmental or talk about people's appearance in a bad, negative way is, you know, it's like all those things I feel like are really, important not to do, you know, and not to engage with other people to do it and try to diffuse it.
Do you feel like on the other side of this, Dita, because, you know, you are known, you know, just speaking frankly, you're known for being such a, this external beauty with perfect hair and perfect makeup and a perfect body and, you know, perfect, dancer, and people do talk about your appearance. Do you feel like on the other side of this, after this, what sounds like a really beautiful, intense healing that you've been through, where you're just like, no, I don't want to put out images. I don't want to, you know, do that right now. I'm just going to be home. And I'm going to be gardening and I'm going to live this really natural, normal lifestyle. What do you think is going to shift for you on the other side?
I mean, I feel like I've become and not really related to what's going on right now, really, but something that the past few years I felt like I used to be very, and my PR and all my people around me were like, they'd never let a picture get out of me without makeup on. And now I feel very like, here's a picture of me without makeup on. Here's me like on my, I have an app and I kind of look at it as a little club and I'm active on there more than here, but me without makeup. And I don't like deliberately put out terrible pictures of myself or something, you know,
but
I mean, I just feel like I've like softened more to that. Like I used to be very, you know, old Hollywood about it. Like I wanted only the very best because I think I had like a, you know, when I was younger, always this, like the illusion of 1940s Hollywood, because those are the only pictures we saw were those, you know, the beauty portraits and all that sort of thing, you know, until you really dig deeper and you start to see like there were paparazzi pictures of Rita Hayworth with no makeup on coming off an airplane. We don't see those unless you really dig deep. So I think I've just kind of like softened a little bit to the last, like, you know, five, 10 years about like not being afraid to show people who I am, you know?
I love that
so much, not feeling like I need to only put out like these big dramatic, like, you know, beautifully lit portraits in with, you know, 5 hours of makeup. So
yeah, it sounds wonderful. It sounds like a relaxing into yourself almost.
Yeah, I feel like it's just kind of what I've always wanted to do, is empower other people to like live their life the kind of the way that I do, which has always been like a do-it-yourself type thing. That's what my whole book, the Beauty Mark book, was about. It was like 400 pages of like, here's how I do my hair and my makeup. If you're interested, here's all my secrets. But it's very like decisive, you know? And so I feel like I also want to continue that and tell people like, you don't have to be dressed up while you're here. You're doing this isolation. If you want to, and you get pleasure out of it, and it makes you feel better, you should. You know, I feel like there have been maybe 2 days in the last, what is it, like, are we going on like 5 weeks or 6 weeks? I don't even know.
Yes, I know. It's blurring together.
Yeah, maybe twice I've put on like eyeliner and lipstick and done my hair. And I make a point to like wash my hair every week and put like my hot rollers in so that I have like volume in my hair. So, you know, so I'm not doing nothing. But I think it's really just like telling people, do what makes you feel good. There's no rules. You know, if you want to wear a ball gown while you're doing your, you know, cleaning your kitchen, you can. If you don't want to, you don't have to. I think it's just like like playful moment, I think, where it is what you want it to be. I mean, I think it's difficult. Like, I haven't been very, you know, I'm not sharing a lot on social media because I feel like people don't really, you know, we all have different, we're all dealing with different setbacks because of this. Some of them much more dramatic than others. And I just feel like kind of putting my, you know, telling people what my problems are is very like, I'm not that comfortable doing that, because whenever I think of that, I think, you know, listen, there's people that are dealing with so many other things right now, and whether it's related to coronavirus or isn't, you know, just yesterday, you might remember Mari Windsor from the book also. She's
yes.
She was just taken off life support last night.
Sorry to hear that.
For her, in her long battle with ALS. And so like, it kind of puts it into perspective there too. And kind of, we're all dealing with different kinds of emotions right now. And I feel like I don't really like to complain about anything that this coronavirus, how this situation, this pandemic is affecting me or my business. And, you know, we all are having our own different kind of issues. And there's a quick judgment to be like, well, that's nothing compared to this, you know?
Why do we have to keep judging and comparing?
Yeah, it's like a constant like judging thing going on, and it makes my head spin.
The average person breathes over 23,000 times in a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for allergens and germs to get into your nose and body and wreak havoc. That is, unless you regularly clean your nose and sinuses. For healthy breathing and a strong body, use Clear Nasal Spray. Clear is a natural nasal spray featuring xylitol, an ingredient clinically proven to work against bacteria and effectively clean, not just rinse, your nose. Clear Nasal Spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airways, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Clear is natural and effective. In a recent study, researchers found that xylitol nasal sprays like Clear are just as effective as leading medicated nasal sprays. For better breathing, get Clear today. You can find it at all major retailers, CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens, Sprouts, Whole Foods, and everywhere else.
Hey, I'm Autumn Calabrese, and I have a question for you. How do you do life? I might be a superstar trainer, but I'm also a boy mom, sister, daughter, friend, and entrepreneur. You might think my life is all working out and cooking healthy, delicious recipes, but trust me, there is so much more to it, and this is it. This is all of those real moments you talk about with your family and friends. Ever wonder what else life has to offer? Bring your curious appetite and let's do life together. Subscribe now at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and PodcastOne.com.
So, Dita, one thing I've always felt with you is this strength and this clarity and, you know, I'm doing my own thing. Whether I love hearing it now, just very clear. I'm not putting out pictures right now. That's just what I feel. And you pretty much, I mean, burlesque has always been around, but you pioneered this whole, you know, Vanity Fair has called you this burlesque super heroine. You created this whole category of glamour and burlesque and being on these best dress lists. Like, you just created this whole thing that was yourself. There was no predecessor. There was nothing to kind of model, but it just came from your own, you know, hey, I'm going to do this. And that's, I do feel that in your book. It's saying, hey, I'm sharing with you what I've done, but it's, say, unapologetic. And it's also saying, this is what I feel. And if you like it, great. If you don't, that's okay too. So you're not writing to please other people. You're not creating this to please other people. And women, so many women, especially, you know, not especially, but in my community, we get a lot of questions about confidence. We get a lot of questions about connecting with yourself and feeling that voice. So is this something that, you know, I know it's a hard question, but is it something that you feel you were brought up with from your parents, from your mother, gave you that confidence? Is it something that you developed along the way? You know, this whole do-it-yourself attitude, there's this self-reliance. I know Ralph Waldo Emerson talked about that rooting into yourself. Where do you think that came from, and how have you been able to maintain that being in the public eye and having this pressure on, you know, wanting to look a certain way, but then you just kind of keep evolving and doing what you want to do?
Yeah, I
think it can't be easy.
It's definitely been learned. I grew up in a farming town in Michigan, and I was very painfully shy, very shy, just kind of like awkward. You know, I wanted to be a ballerina. I was never that good at it. So I kind of like little by little created this whole like mythology of self, if that makes sense. Like, I started wearing vintage clothes because I couldn't afford like the cool designer clothes that my friend in school had. And I started, you know, discovered red lipstick, and I was like, wow, I feel like I look like a movie star. And like, so all these little stepping stones that took me to confidence. And then I'd say, you know, later in life when I had an actual career doing this, I was suddenly kind of like put into the limelight, and, I had the spotlight shined on what I was doing with burlesque and striptease by fashion magazines. And I felt like I had to like have, you know, live up to what any accolades or, you know, good things people were saying about what I was doing. I felt like I had, when I started realizing I had a lot more female followers than men, which like at the start of my career, when I was like 18 to like, you know, 30, I had a lot of men, you know, I was a Playboy model. I was like, you know, still a pinup girl with black hair and pale skin and red lips. Like, I was definitely, you know, under the male gaze for the most part with regard to my shows and with, you know, the Playboy Association. But I realized when I wrote a book about why I loved these pinup, why I looked to the 1940s and 50s to kind of develop a signature style that made me feel powerful and gave me kind of like a voice, if that makes sense. Made me feel like I could walk into a room and even if I didn't feel like at that time I could speak with confidence, I could still walk in with confidence and be feel strong. So the aesthetics helped me do that. And then as time went on, I found myself in different positions where I felt like I had wanted to use my voice too. And I think another pivotal moment for me was I was MAC Viva Glam spokesperson. So I work with the MAC AIDS Fund in their fundraiser for Viva Glam, which is a lipstick where they give 100% of the selling price to the MAC AIDS Fund. And they've raised like, you know, $500 million with the same a lipstick. So I was working for them for 2 years and I had to give speeches and I'd never done anything like that before, but I was like, I'm going to learn how to do this. I'm going to learn how to make it fun. I am terrified. And I'd go up there and I'd give these speeches like all over the world. And I was terrified, you know, but I did one of these first speeches, I faltered big time. And I said into the microphone, I said something like, can I start again, you guys? You know, like I just said,
I love it.
And they were all like, then they were like, yay, yeah, please start again, you know, and I did it. And I just realized when you make your mistakes, people usually will find it kind of like connects them to you because we all make mistakes,
like,
especially like that. And if you kind of just go like, I need to start over, you know, then everyone kind of like has a laugh and they like you better. And then they like your whole better. So I kind of like went through this process of like learning how to overcome shyness and fear and find my confidence. And also knowing that confidence is like the weather. It's like some days it's good, some days it's not. Like some days my confidence is high, sometimes it's not. You just kind of start noticing what gives you confidence. Like even with your, like the people you surround yourself with. Who are the people I surround myself with that make me feel good and I make them feel good and they bring out the best in me?
Mm-hmm.
Try to control the circumstances. So whether it is wearing a red lipstick or wearing a dress like, or wearing your hair, you know, blue, it's like what makes you feel good and trying to notice what those things are and controlling the circumstances as best you can. So for me, those circumstances are like, you know, I'm going to, when I go on stage, I'm going to make, the lights are going to be pink because it's flattering and it's pretty and it's glamorous and it's otherworldly or whatever. You know, there's so much of that you can do in your real life too. And yeah, I always think about that. I just think you can't always feel confident, but you can notice what those things are that make you feel that way and try to stand up for yourself and keep those circumstances the way you want them to be.
I love that, Dita. That's so practical. I always say things like that when people ask me about food cravings or, you know, not feeling good. You know, what was the trigger? What came before? How are you trying to shift your mood? And it's really great to hear from someone like yourself saying, you know, confidence comes and goes, because it's easy, again, to look at social media or to look at someone and say, oh, they get it. They're always strong. They're always confident. Mm-hmm. But as humans, and especially as women, we are vulnerable and we fluctuate, and there's so many different cycles of things. And
your vulnerability is part of your strength. and that's what I always, I had, do you know the writer Paulo Coelho?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
I spent a lot of time with him at one point in my career for a few years. Like I was living in Paris and I would see him. I was like his date to a few events and stuff, just like friends. He kind of like made me realize a lot of stuff about what I do and what made it special to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not like the things like, oh, you're vulnerable. Showing my vulnerability on stage is very important part of what makes an interesting performance. And I feel like if you start thinking about, for me, I think about a lot of the artists that I really love, and they're kind of like people that are communicators and are willing to, they show who they really are and it feels very authentic. And maybe they're not even the, like technically the very best, but there's something that makes me like it attracts me to them with like this invisible heartstrings that go to them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I have some, something in common with them. Like me as a failed ballet dancer who wasn't good enough, or like a girl who wasn't tall enough to be a model and wasn't really pretty enough to be a model, and kind of like going against all these like things and still making it in my own way. Like a burlesque star, what are the chances? How did the ballerina turn into a burlesque star? Well, because I couldn't good enough, you know? It's like, and all those things are you know, part of what led me to do that, which I'm grateful to have had these like short, quote, shortcomings. You know, otherwise I wouldn't have done what I did. And I'm proud that there's a big burlesque movement and that I'm part of it in a way. Yeah. So I think like sometimes you forget your vulnerability is such an important part of finding strength.
Yes. And I'll say, Dita, that, you know, the last book that, you know, you love, and I think it's my best book too. It took me a while to feel okay being vulnerable. I mean, that's my fifth book. And it's the first time I ever admitted that I had eating disorders and that I was bulimic in high school. And it felt good to talk about it. And, you know, it's probably one of the reasons I was drawn to initially helping people with food. I mean, now the lifestyle's expanded so much. It's very, you know, there's a lot of spiritual parts and meditation now. But the food part was because I was trying to heal myself. And again, I think, especially as women, we just want to be liked. We want the guys to like us. We want to be perfect. We want to have this image. But there is that strength and vulnerability. We're starting to hear about that more and more. But it took me a while to feel the courage to do that. And I love hearing about your story, to your path to vulnerability as well. Because now I feel, knowing you for a while, you feel the most grounded. You also feel the most real and vulnerable and the most beautiful I've ever felt you, like a unfolding.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I get, you know, even when I was like 30 years old, I'd have journalists going, what are you going to do when you become older and you will not be able to do what you do? I always speak with a weird accent when I do that, because I always have this moment. There was a moment where I was in Germany or somewhere, Austria, and the journalist is like, he actually said, he goes, what will you do when you are old and ugly and no longer interesting to people? And
oh, and my gosh,
what will you do for your job? And I was like, so I always speak in that accent because I'll never forget it. And I was, and the first thing I said was like, you wouldn't ask me that if I were a man, first of all.
Right.
And I just thought, like, you know, everyone's setting you up. You know, I was only 30. You know, I was just like,
oh my God.
I'm 47 now. And I'm like, it made me really think about how we're being set up to, you know, decline or fail or like, you know, lose. They build you up to watch you fall. And I just thought, like, well, wait, why do I have to be, why can't I can become better, I think. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I still feel that way every time. I've almost retired like 5 times. Mm. And I kind of just said, what if I become better? And I thought, and when I say better, I think like the way you think and your intellect and your knowledge and your wisdom and all of these things are part of what makes you better at no matter what you're doing, whether you're a singer. You can be, we all know that there's, talent is not rare. Talent is not rare at all. you can see that when you watch any of these like shows of like people with talent. It's very common, in fact. But what is uncommon is people that have something to back it up and have like thought of the ways to like cleverly parlay it into something that makes people go, well, I need to know more about that. You know, when I think about that, it's just like, you know, I've never been able to sing, but I made an album. I think more and more we're looking for people that can communicate, have something to say, have something to share, and are willing to say like, I'm not very good at this. And so, you know, maybe you can do it too. You know, it's like for every person that has told me I'm not good enough or I'm not pretty enough or I'm not this or somebody's better looking, prettier, the better body, or better dancer. It's like, I'm just here to be the one that says like, you can still do it against the odds if you really believe in it, you know, or if you have something to share.
What would you say, Dita, were, you know, vulnerability, I'm hearing a lot. And you say the word share a lot, which I think is important. You definitely get that vibe where you want to share with other women and other people. You're not withholding. You're not, you know, creating this competitive atmosphere, but it's very communal. It's very sharing. There's vulnerability. Well, how else do you think you've been able to, you know, as you were saying,
break out of that? Oh, you know, everybody has talent. There's a lot of beautiful people. How do you think, how and why do you think so many people want to hear from you?
I think I came from like a side of things where I thought, you know, when you think of the word role model, I'm an extremely unlikely role model because I did a lot of things that just came from my heart. Like I said, oh, I became famous for making bondage photos, like, you know, stuff like that, like taking things that are risque or taboo and kind of like showing it in a different light. And So what I think I have always like tried to share is that I'm not trying to be Miss Perfect. I kind of have been like, hey, I think these things are interesting. Like my eye was caught by like vintage erotica and pinup. And I kind of, you know, I thought, I like that. I find it interesting. I know it's taboo. Striptease, I know it's taboo. Strippers, there's a negative connotation with strippers. I wanted to bring that to light and make it, you know, to kind of release the taboo as best I can. And that's mostly a kind of a self-indulgence, but I know I'm not the only one that feels that way. I'm not the only one that doesn't want to apologize for my sexuality or, you know, for indulging in things or wanting to. I just feel like we're in a world full of different types of role models. We need all types because we all have different feelings and we all have different ideals. And the ultimate definition of being a feminist is kind of at this point is you can't judge other people for what they think right for their lives. So I don't want to sit here, and I never really sit here and say I'm a role model, because I cringe at myself saying something like that. But but I've become kind of an unlikely role model, I think, because I want to share, you know, I'm authentic about it. I say, this is what I've always liked. If you like it too, come along with me.
Yes.
Play, you know, that's why we're doing burlesque shows all over the world for audiences of 2,500 people. I mean, I was supposed to be in the UK doing 5 nights at the London Palladium, and there's like in a 2,000 person theater every night. And it's mostly filled with women that are wearing their red lipstick and their pretty outfits, and they have their hair in curls. And I'm really like proud to have created that kind of atmosphere where it's celebratory of glamour and sensuality and kind of like indulgence and decadence, that in a way that's not hurting anyone. A lot of people don't understand that. Like if somebody's listening and they've never seen, they think maybe they saw a burlesque show, or they think they know, or they're not sure. They're like, isn't she a stripper? It's a very, like, your mind will be changed if you find yourself in one of these rooms, if we ever do have these big shows.
Oh, yeah. I obviously, when I went to your show, it was powerful. I have never been to a burlesque show. I was very new to it all. This was here in LA. It was at the House of Blues. Mm-hmm. Was your show. And I felt, I had all these feelings, and it didn't feel, it's almost when you're talking, it didn't feel like it was for us. It felt like it was for you. In a weird way, if that makes sense. Like, it just felt like you were empowered and you were strong and you were just sharing how you feel empowered. It didn't feel, I don't know. It's so hard to explain. Like you said, the feeling of being there, but I did notice it was mostly pretty much all women and wanting to have that feeling of confidence. And the thing that keeps echoing in your work is you're trying to figure out what people would buy or what they liked, and then trying to figure a way to sell it. You are just so authentically, hey, this is what I like, and I'm going to share that. And the people that are going to find it because they like it too are going to find it. I don't have to push them to buy anything.
Yeah. No, it's just been something that I've like have been doing since I turned 18. And now my touring show is, you know, there's just as many male performers in it as female. There's different representations of beauty that are present. I'm not sure if you remember Dirty Martini, who, you know, I always make jokes about Dirty Martini. I'm like, Dirty Martini, if you get one more standing ovation in the middle of the show.
Wait, is she the host of the show?
No, Dirty Martini is one of my favorite burlesque stars in the whole world. She's in New York. I've known her for a very long time, and she has this incredible, like, incredible strength. She comes from ballet too, but she's like voluptuous. I can't, I'm trying to remember.
Yes. Her. Red hair. Like, does she have kind of red hair?
44. No, she's platinum blonde, zaftig, beautiful, strong body, and just
look her up. Yeah.
Tassel twirler extraordinaire. And she's really like just such a beloved burlesque figure and historian. And she brings the house down, shakes the room every single time. And I just, you know, it, I love building a show that isn't just about me, like, cause I like producing these shows and casting these shows and thinking of like people that are changing and involving burlesque. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be a pinup girl show. It's not a girly show. I want people to leave feeling inspired. And they saw someone with maybe a skin color like theirs, a body like theirs. Maybe they saw a man do a striptease. They saw someone trans performing. It's like very important to me to not just make it my show and make it about the show overall and how people feel when they see a show like this. And I think that's why there's such a big female and LGBTQ audience. Is definitely most of the men there are, you know, I get this all the time. I'll get letters or emails always around touring time from men that say, you know, my wife wanted to come to the show. So I bought her tickets. I had no idea what I was getting into. And, you know, and then they go on to talk about how it's like, you know, being in that room and celebrating beauty and eroticism in many forms has pulled some kind of meaning. And I mean, listen, it's nothing new. It's some kind of erotica that's geared toward women, you know, I mean, that's kind of what I did, but you know, I did it because I just love it. You know, I always had this fantasy about being in showbiz and being a ballerina and being on stage and wearing pretty costumes and makeup.
You just done it in your own way.
I just parlayed it into striptease. I looked at I always loved musicals from the 1940s. And I thought, what if that was a striptease? You know, it's just kind of where my head went. I started working in a strip club when I was 19 years old. And so it's kind of how it started was, I was a pinup girl, kind of famously carrying on the legacy of Betty Page. And then I was working a strip club and it kind of all came together where it turned into a burlesque show.
I love it. It's so amazing, Data. And I have to tell you, I'm just sitting here, sitting back. I cannot wait until we're on the other side of this and I come to your next show. I love that feeling, you know, back to this feeling confident. There's a feeling sometimes that you really have to get from a live performance.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we talked about this, like, you know, and I love your book. I love all these things. So just, you know, Data, you're awesome. I could talk to you all day. Thank you so much for coming back on the podcast.
Well, I'm glad to be on here. Oh, I know. I wanted to ask you something.
Please.
I was like, oh, I'm going to ask Kimberly this. I was going to ask you about, like, in your relationships when you, and maybe this is other people want to know about this too, but I think I understand your partner is not vegan. And how do you, especially now when we're all eating the same meals and we're all like trying to, how do you reconcile that? You know, I, because I have the same kind of thing where I live with someone who is not, he enjoys the meals I make from him, from your cookbook and everything. But it's just like something I was like, how does Kimberly do this?
Okay, so there's a very practical solution to this, which I know not everybody has access to, but he is, so first of all, when we started dating, and I say, hey, that was just to get me, wasn't it? For the first 3 months, he was vegan, and everybody was like, oh, wow, he's turned. He was this big, you know, CrossFit carnivore guy, but he's gone to a hybrid, right? But the practical solution, Data, we're so lucky, is that we bought this house a few months ago and it has a guest house.
Yes.
So in the main house, we are completely vegan.
we eat here together. He will eat what I cook, and he, you know, he loves it, and we make smoothies and we do everything in this house. If he is going to eat me, it's over in the other house.
Hilarious.
Oh, and he has a smoker over there, and he doesn't bring, and I'm not trying to create these rules, but he's like, you know, out of respect for you, I'm going to keep the meat over there. Now, we're lucky to have that situation. It's like his office and his guest house over there. Otherwise, I don't know, because I haven't been confronted with this.
Well, I think that answer, I mean, that's really what I was looking for. It's like, you know, I kind of, I think we have a good compromise, but I just love that. I have a barbecue outside, so.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't think it's all or nothing. I've really softened in this way because I have dated yogis and I've been with vegans, and I've never felt, you know, the kind of connection I feel with John, whereas he, you know, you've met him, Dita, he, you know, looks very different. His body from his neck down is completely covered in tattoos, and he is, you know, he has different interests, and he loves motorcycles and all this stuff, but yet we're so connected. So it's that seeing below the surface and feeling the heart connection. And so because of that, you know, if we're in a restaurant and he orders a steak and I'm going to get a bunch of vegetables, you know, I'm not with him because I expect him to be exactly like me. And while I am very passionate about, you know, environmental and health and yogic reasons for being plant-based, I think people have to come to what feels good to them in their own time. And he's certainly largely plant-based, but can't make somebody be where they're not. And that's part of love. Real love, I think, is accepting people where they are.
And that's one thing I always loved about you. And when I met you is, you know, I should tell your listeners, I am not a vegan either, but I am, I'd say 80% plant-based. Mm-hmm. But and so you remember we had that conversation too, where I was like, I'm not ready to give up eggs, or I might, mm-hmm. I like, go have sushi. So yeah, I just wanted to say that lest anyone mm-hmm. think this like model vegan, because I'm definitely not. I'm just
no, but it's,
you know, it's, I'm 80% like I love vegetables, and but yeah, I've been always trying to find like a compromise with living with a meat eater. But he compromises too. I think it's just coming to compromise then. But I wanted to know how it is for you. That's all.
You know, yeah, exactly. I think when you really love somebody and you're with them for that, you soften in a lot of ways. Like you were talking about softening. I mean, things that used to bug me, like, oh, you peed on the seat again and you're not, you know, sometimes he leaves his clothes. I'm like, where do you think they're going to go? Why don't you just put them in the hamper? But, you know, there's all these other strengths and all these other amazing the connection is so strong that I think that, you know, if you asked me 5-10 years ago, oh, would you marry a non-vegan? I'd probably say, no, it's such a big part of my lifestyle. Right. But now I've come so much into self-acceptance, which mm-hmm. helps me accept other people more. And, you know, I'm not with somebody just because of how they eat. I want them to, he respects my point of view. He loves it. He loves our food, but sometimes he's going to eat eggs. Sometimes he's going to eat fish or whatever. And I'm okay with that because mm-hmm. I love him.
Yeah. Good.
Well, Dita, on the other side of this, A, I cannot wait to go to a show. B, you and I will have to have dinner together. You will have to come to our new house.
I think Snyder meals all the time, and I'm eating from a lot from your cookbooks, your books lately. Especially so, I always really get excited about when I get invited over to your place for dinner. So hopefully we'll get to do that again.
Oh yes. Wait, Dita, can you share what some of your favorite Soluna Beauty Detox recipes are from the books? I'm sure everybody would love to know some of your faves.
Lately I'm really into your eggless frittata, the one with the garbanzo bean flour, because it's just so easy. And also my meat loving boyfriend loves that one also.
Good.
Yeah. So that one's been a lot. I'm trying to think of what else.
Your smoothie. Yeah.
It's been a little bit harder because it's hard to keep produce in the house. Cause I've only been to the grocery store twice during this lockdown. I'm actually, as soon as I run out of greens is when I'm like, I've got to get over there. Yeah. all. I made your roasted Brussels sprouts recipe recently, which was super good with that. It's like a tahini sauce.
Yes. Yeah.
So I really like that. Oh, and you know what I love is that tempeh taco meat salad that you have.
I love that one too.
I always love all your sauces and things. Oh, and I like your roasted, the red pepper. You have like a red pepper.
Yes.
I think you made that for me the first time I came to your house for dinner. That's in another one of your older books, I think.
Yes, that was, I think that's from Beauty Detox Foods. But do you remember, Dita, when you went on that tour and I would send food to every city? So I was waiting for you.
Yeah. You know what I remember so vividly is when I was just starting a tour in New York and the hurricane hit and I had and all this food from you, but I didn't have a refrigerator and it all went back. The hurricane hit and all the power went out and everything. And I was like, oh, I got to eat all this food.
I know. I
hate wasting food. I was actually just like, oh, I should ask Kimberly. I need the Kimberly Snyder meal delivery service right about now.
Well, thank you so much, Dita. I'm sitting here kind of leaning back. I am almost 37 weeks pregnant. So I've got quite a big belly right now. And it's been in the... And it's interesting. It's a good time to be pregnant, I think. You know, life is slower. We're home a lot. We're bonding. So there's a lot of positives right now, I think.
Yeah. You know, it's actually one thing that popped into my head was, you know, people would always ask me if I ever thought about having a baby. And I kind of would look at them and think, gosh, I've kind of devoted my life to like touring and doing all this. When would I have had time to take the time to do something like that? Thinking, when will I have a time of not being on tour and not working for like a year and a half? And I just went, oh gosh, this was the time, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's like one of those things. Sometimes I don't think everybody needs to go through the parenting experience. I think life is about growth. And I think, you know, I've learned a lot from having my first son and now we're having another baby boy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, growth comes in all forms, in all ways. And you've certainly had a lot of growth and a lot of amazing experience in your life, Dita.
Yeah. And also just to say, like, when people do ask me about why I didn't have a baby, it's not really just about time. There's a zillion different reasons. And I think, like, I never want to, like, you know, shame anybody for not doing it or doing it or whatever. You know, it's very, very personal. And I didn't mean to make light of, like, when would I have time? There's a lot of reasons. You know how it is.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course, it's such a big decision, and there's a lot of things around it. So I totally hear you. And I have a lot of friends that have consciously chosen not to have kids, and you know, friends with kids. So I see all sides of it.
Yeah. I feel like you used to be one of those people, if I'm not mistaken.
You know, I wasn't like, oh my God, I can't wait to have kids. I didn't really think about it until I got pregnant, you know, and I was very happy with my life. So I wasn't looking for it as like a, you know, way to become happy or to fulfill myself. And, you know, I love being a mom, but I also think that I would have been happy too, you know, either way. But I do love, you know, he's just such a light. I do love my son so much, almost to the point where it's hard to imagine loving the second one as much as my first. But yeah, I was never one of those people that was like, oh, I can't wait to be this and that and have all these kids. So I just wasn't thinking about the future that much. I think I was, you know, happy where I was.
Well, very exciting that you are having another little boy, and I can't wait to meet him.
Thank you, my love. Thank you so much. And beauties, be sure to check out all of Dita's information about her upcoming shows, her products, everything she has at Dita.net. We will link to it in the show notes. We will be back here Thursday for our next Q&A community podcast. Till then, take great care. Sending you lots of love. Be safe, be cozy, and see you guys soon.